Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the VBAC Link. Today, we're going to be sharing our friend Meg's story. She is a stay-at-home mom in Omaha, Nebraska, and she has a 2-year-old daughter that was born after a post-date induction and almost 40-hour labor that ended in a cesarean. Just 9 months later, she was blindsided by a positive pregnancy test and spent the duration of her pregnancy preparing mentally, spiritually, and physically for the birth of her son. She had a VBAC, and she is here today to share her story with you. Some of the things along the way through her story that I thought stood out was one, post-date. Obviously, this is something that if you've been here at the VBAC Link, you'll know that we talk about this, post-dates. We have seen such a shift over the last few years since the ARRIVE trial in dates. And we really see that now the 39-week mark is more treated like a 40-week mark. The 40-week mark is more like treated like a 41-week mark. And it's really starting to become rare to even have people go to that 41-week mark and especially past it. So she's going to be sharing her story with you today, actually, with both births that went past 41 weeks. And they were actually both induced. So we have an induction that turned cesarean, an induction that ended in a VBAC. She also has that close duration, that 9 months apart or 9 months later, 17 months apart. So if you are listening and you are one of those mamas that may have, whether surprised or chosen to get pregnant sooner than the 24-month mark or even 18-month mark that many providers suggest, definitely listen up for this episode. She also has a larger baby. Her VBAC baby was larger than her cesarean baby. And she also has a failed epidural. There was something that she said in her story that I wanted to point out. And that is that after many, many, many attempts that were not going well with this epidural, she asked, or they got the highest anesthesiologist there. And that is something that you can do right from the get-go. If you're wanting an epidural, you can say, hey, I want to make sure I have the top anesthesiologist, because sometimes it is harder for people to place an epidural. Or if after one attempt, it's not going really, really well, you can just say, okay, stop. I want the head anesthesiologist. Another thing that we are going to talk about in there is the question. So she mentioned the VBAC Link blog that talks about the questions for your provider. If you have not checked this out yet and you are still looking for a provider, I highly suggest checking it out. We will make sure that the link is in the show notes so you can see more about who you're looking for when it comes to support versus lack of support. Because if we have not learned anything over all the years of one, supporting VBAC clients, our own VBAC journeys, and listening to story after story, that is that support is huge. So make sure you find the best supportive provider that you can. And something I wanted to add to this is if you have a female provider, you may want to ask them about their births if they have kids. We have seen here in Utah that there are some providers that will just schedule a C-section. They won't even go into labor. And for some reason in my head, that feels like a red flag. If a provider doesn't even believe in birth and their own ability to birth, I don't know if they're going to believe in other people's ability to birth. So that might be something to consider. And then last of all, I want to talk about asynclitic. We have seen many asynclitic births over the year. And a lot of the times, once a baby is recognized to be asynclitic, they're pretty low, and it can be a little bit harder to get a baby rotated and into a more ideal position for a vaginal birth. So I wanted to share some tips that are right here actually on spinning babies. So check out spinningbabies.com. You guys, we love them. And we'll actually have the link here in the show notes as well. But doing pelvic floor release, the sideline release, something that's really, really cool about this story is she had her pelvic floor specialist who was also becoming a doula, but she had her with her, which is so cool. And if you are seeing a pelvic floor specialist, I highly suggest asking them if they would be able to visit you during your labor or come and do an exam or a treatment even during your labor. Just like chiropractic care is a really, really great one to do in labor, so is pelvic floor releases. So you want to follow that with the lunge. The lunge will help better work with the pelvic floor and help that sideline release become better and like the better engaged. So doing the dangle should follow the pelvic floor release and the lunge. And again, you guys, spinning babies is phenomenal, and they have all of these, like the dangle, what that is, the lunge, all of these things, they have in the link. So make sure that you check out this link. Sometimes resting and not pushing is going to really, really help, because if we have an asynclitic baby and we're pushing, pushing, and pushing, that can really just kind of get the baby further down and more stuck in an asynclitic position. Something that I have seen work with my own clients is an abdominal lift. So we'll do an abdominal lift into that sideline release. So you reach your hand underneath your belly and you slowly reach, kind of pull up and in, and it can kind of help pull baby up and in. Vertical positions such as standing, slightly bending knees, and during a surge. And also, that abdominal lift is more ideal during a contraction. Standing with one foot on a stool. So we know the asymmetrical movement is really, really great. And even if you can't stand, say you're in a bed or something like that, you can try with your knees on your hands and knees, or even trying laying down and trying to make your hips asymmetrical that way. Sitting on a toilet with one foot on a stool and the other foot on the floor, pulling on a towel or Rebozo during a pushing contraction, shaking the apples, and keep moving. And you're going to notice in this story, that is what they did. They just kept on moving. So if you have had an asynclitic baby before, or you're in labor and you find that your baby is asynclitic, jot these notes down. These are wonderful tips on how to help get that baby out of that asynclitic position. All right, right before we dive into this story, I do have a review of the week. This is SRM New York. And it says, thank you, feedback link. It says, my first birth in 2018 was a traumatic home birth termed emergency C-section. I had done everything I was supposed to avoid interventions and a C-section, but ended up with all of it anyway. The whole experience was crushing, and it took years to recover from. Listening to the feedback link was a huge part of my emotional processing. Hearing other women's stories helped me feel less alone and gave me the courage to try again. When I became pregnant in 2022, I knew I had to do things differently. I took all the advice I had gotten from the VBAC link and put it all into action. I got a doula. I found a VBAC supportive provider. I took the VBAC online course and emotionally prepared and surrendered to the birth process. Well, just 12 days ago, I had my VBAC. It was amazing and left me euphoric for days. So much of my success I owe to this podcast. Thank you for helping me experience my dream birth. I am forever grateful. Oh, and that was left just about a year ago. So, SRM New York, if you are still with us, I just wanted to give you a huge virtual hug and huge congratulations. Thank you so much for sharing that amazing review. And as always, if you have a moment, please press pause right now and leave us a review. We love them and love sharing them on the podcast. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own,
and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Well, welcome, Meg, to the show. Thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks, Megan.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to talk about your story. I feel like two key things about your story are things that we see honestly on a daily basis in our inbox. And that is, I'm 40 weeks and my provider's telling me that I have to have a baby like today.
Yep.
So the post-date thing, can we go over post-date? And then honestly, like the stress surrounded the close duration of babies is insane for moms out there, because these providers are just putting so much stress on these moms saying that they can't VBAC with a close duration. And we know that studies vary, but I am excited to talk about yours because you have a 17-month gap. So right? Okay.
Pretty tight. Yep.
Okay. So we've got post-date and 17-month gap. So all right, let's talk about baby number one.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with my daughter, we found out that we were pregnant just a couple months after I had a miscarriage, actually. So going into that pregnancy, I was already feeling just kind of tender and raw and didn't really know, what to expect with how well the pregnancy would go. And so I did as much as I could to prepare. I took a birth class that a friend had recommended with a doula here in town and really just kind of sailed through that pregnancy. Everything was healthy and good. There was never any real concern from my providers, but there was just always kind of in the back of my mind, like, what could go wrong here? So yeah, it was just really kind of anxious going into that whole labor. And
do you think it was from your previous loss type of it? Because I know that's very common after a loss where you do have that feeling of like, I just want this baby so bad.
Yes,
so I don't
absolutely
want anything to go wrong.
Yes, it definitely was. Yeah. And so just like at every appointment, I was just kind of holding my breath, like waiting to hear the heartbeat. And every time it happened, it was just, it kind of got me through to the next appointment. And I had actually, that previous pregnancy, I had seen a practice of OBs and then shifted my care to the midwife practice at the medical center here in Omaha. And for me, that shift kind of helped kind of reset a little bit for these different stories. So I, with the midwives at the med center, you see kind of a rotating group. So you never know who's going to end up being at your birth. So they want you to see all of the midwives throughout your prenatal care. And there was definitely some that I connected with more than others. And I was definitely hoping and praying that I would get the one that I kind of bonded with the most, and also just kind of hoping and praying that labor would happen naturally. And unfortunately, I ended up, obviously, I was post-dates with my daughter. I was 41 weeks one day when the midwives wanted to go ahead and induce me. And so I went in for that induction, and it's kind of funny because I think I expected that induction to go a lot more smoothly than it ended up going. I had heard of one of my husband's coworkers had been induced at the same hospital a few weeks before, and her induction went just right as rain. She had her baby within like 6 hours.
Oh,
and I'm like,
wow.
All right. I know. So I'm like,
is she a first time mom?
Yeah, she was a first time mom. So I was like, oh yeah, I could do 6 hours of an induction. Like that sounds great. It did not go that way. We went in for my induction at, I don't know, 7 a.m. and they started me on Pitocin pretty much right away. They basically said that my cervix was ready enough that they didn't need to do any like cervical ripening or anything like that. So I was like, okay, here we go, Pitocin. I know you're not really supposed to go on Pitocin, but I'm here for this induction, so I kind of have to do what they tell me to do. And it was just me and my husband, so we just kind of went with the flow, and we just kind of hung out. We watched TV while we waited for the Pitocin to kick in, and they came and did their checks every once in a while, and I felt like I was in a good headspace at the beginning, and yeah, I was just kind of ready for whatever to happen. When they came in and did the first cervical check, I think it was, I don't know, maybe 6, 8 hours in, I had made like little to no progress. And so I was pretty discouraged by that, but I was like, okay, we'll just keep rolling with the Pitocin. They had to kind of amp up the Pitocin almost as high as it would go. And things gradually started to pick up, but I think at one point they took me off of the Pitocin and kind of did a little hit break or kind of reset my body. And I think that did help. When I went back on the Pitocin, it definitely ramped up my contractions more. About 15 hours in to all of this, they did another cervical check, and I was like, surely I'm gonna be 8 centimeters. I'll be into transition soon. I was still 4 centimeters, and so I was extremely discouraged at that point, and I was exhausted, having I had hadn't had any pain management up until that point. So I was like, okay, I think I'm ready for the epidural. I don't think I can do 15 more hours of this. If I'm only at 4 centimeters, I'm not even halfway there. Like, who knows how long the rest of this labor is going to go. So ended up getting an epidural. They let me take a bath before my epidural, which I was really grateful for, because that's what I had originally wanted my pain management to be, was hydrotherapy. And at the time, I couldn't be on Pitocin and be in the tub. So that was kind of my last little shred of comfort that I got before kind of being grounded to the hospital bed. So I was able to get some rest then with my epidural, and just kind of laid there in my bed. One of the nurses came and she tried to do all these rotating moves to kind of help things along, and I was just exhausted. I like didn't really want to have anything to do with it. And they tried the peanut ball, they tried rotating me, all of this. And my daughter was handling the labor really well. I was just like so burned out after so many hours of everything. At one point, though, they kind of decided, all right, we're going to go ahead and break your water, see if that gets things moving. So they did that. And then they placed a fetal monitor in her scalp, which, yeah, just didn't go super well. I think the midwife tried, I don't know, she tried for a while. And my husband was really upset with how long it was taking and how much pain that I was in.
Oh, yeah.
And the nurse at one point was like, should we call OB and like see if they can help you out with this? And the midwife was kind of stubborn and she didn't really want any help with that. And she did finally get it in and things moved along great. But I was definitely like put off by that like lack of, I don't know, humility for lack of a better word. I just wanted to
Yeah.
have the best care that I could. And yeah, it basically from there, my daughter was doing well again, but towards the end of everything, I finally hit 10 centimeters, was ready to push. I was so excited. They took a picture. They're like, all right, this is going to be, kind of your last picture as a family of two. And I look like a beached whale in the picture. It's the most horrific picture
Oh,
I
I bet you
ever
don't.
seen. But yeah, so, but we were excited. We were like, all right, the time has finally come. At this point, I think I had been laboring for like, I don't know, 25 hours. So I was like ready to push. And with the epidural, for some reason, like I just didn't have a ton of mobility, which obviously some epidurals you have some mobility and some you don't. This one, it was just like my legs were like dead weight. So pushing was just like extremely challenging. And yeah, pushed for a while. I felt like I wasn't getting any feedback from my midwife or the nurse. My sweet husband was just like, you're doing great. You're pushing so well. And like, my provider, I'm just like staring into a blank face. Like nobody is making any sort of encouragement. And for me, that was just like, I don't know how I'm doing with pushing. Like they say everything's fine, but I'm not getting a lot of, encouragement or feedback. So at one point, they brought the mirror because I thought, oh, maybe that will be some good feedback. I hated the mirror. I was like, this
You
is, oh
did.
man, it was so. I think for some reason I was thinking like, oh, if they're bringing the mirror out, like you must be able to see the head. Like that's why they would bring the mirror out. No, you could not see the head. You could not see anything. So I was just like, what? I'm just staring at. I don't want to look at this.
Oh, yeah. So that maybe they did it a little
Little
prematurely.
prematurely. Yeah,
Because a lot of
definitely.
the time you bring it out and it
Yeah.
helps you, like they say that sometimes
Yes.
it can actually lower pushing time because you're
Oh,
seeing what
really?
you're doing.
Sure.
There's that connection, but maybe they brought it out prematurely. So that I would see that. I could see how that would be just frustrating.
Oh,
You're like,
man.
what am I looking
It
at?
was
Why am I just
terrible.
looking at myself when nothing's happening down there?
Not great. So had them take that away and then just continued pushing. I think I ended up pushing for almost 3 hours. And at that point, my husband and I are like, well, what do we do next? Like, this is clearly not working. My midwife was like, well, let's call in OB for a vacuum delivery consult. And we're like, oh, great. Like, that's not a C-section. Like, this will be great. So we waited probably for an hour. They told me not to push while we waited for the OB. And she was like attending to some other matter in the hospital. And we just kept asking, like, when are they coming? When are they coming? They sent, I think, a resident to come and like check things out. And by this point, I had had so many hands up my vagina. I was like, if she's going to check, if this resident is going to check my cervix and then the doctor has to check my cervix, can we just like skip one of them and just have the OB check so that I don't have to have that many hands? And thankfully, they respected that. And we were able to wait for the OB who finally came in. And we're thinking, okay, great. She's going to do this consult. We're going to get this vacuum going. Well, she came in and she was basically like, it's not possible for us to do a vacuum delivery at this point. My baby like wasn't low enough for that to even be feasible. And so then she's like, we could let's check for forceps delivery, and that wasn't going to be feasible either. She basically said that they wouldn't be able to fit the forceps in around her head the way that it
So she
was.
was too high.
She was too high, and then I think she was also asynclitic, and so she just wasn't gonna come. She just wasn't gonna come down. So after kind of hemming and hawing, she's like, you could push for another hour and then we could attempt a vacuum, but we might still end up needing to do a C-section. And we were like, okay, if I don't really want to keep pushing for an hour if the vacuum is like a maybe and a probably not. So at that point, we basically just decided, okay, we've been laboring for so long. It doesn't seem like these are going to be feasible solutions. So we just decided to go back and have the C-section. And I just remember that being like a whirlwind process, like them getting me ready. And I was in so much pain from having pushed for so long that I was just like shaking. And I was, my shoulder blade was like just raging pain while we headed back to the operating room. And I just remember feeling like everything. I know they had me on epidural, they had me on pain meds, but I felt like I could feel the tugging and the pulling. And I was apparently very verbal during the whole process, asking for more pain meds. And my husband actually worked at the hospital, works he still works there, and so he knew the anesthesiologist. He is a critical care pharmacist, so he's very familiar with medications. And so he was advocating for my pain meds at that point. And things just didn't go well during that whole process. And they did finally pull my daughter out, and they held her up to the clear plastic. And I just remember she grabbed my little finger through the plastic, and that was,
She
yeah, it was so sweet. They
did.
like pressed her up,
Oh.
and I just stuck my hand out, and she just grabbed my little finger. And after all of the like trauma from the whole day, that was definitely the
Yes.
bright spot in getting to meet her. Yeah. It was kind of crazy then afterwards, they roll us into recovery and I ended up being in the hospital for like 3 or 4 more days just recovering. And we had nurses and doctors all say, oh, you can attempt a VBAC and you should try VBAC with your next baby. And I'm like, hold on, I just did, like, what's a VBAC? And I just had a C-section. Like, why are we talking about like my next baby?
Next baby.
Yeah. So yeah, I didn't really know what I wanted at that point. And
Yeah.
yeah, was just trying to kind of wrap my head around the disappointment of everything kind of going wrong and just feeling overwhelmed with, yeah, just feeling like all the things that I had hoped and planned for the birth didn't go as I had hoped. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So, yeah.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. So eventually you did decide, okay, baby number 12. Well,
Yes.
did you decide?
We
This is
didn't
a question,
decide.
actually, right?
We my next pregnancy was definitely a surprise. I had spent a lot of time like trying to actively work through my recovery with my C-section. I had seen a pelvic floor therapist,
Awesome.
core and pelvic floor, and she and I actually became really close, and she worked with me for months. Really from my birth until my next birth, she worked with me. And so I had kind of felt like I was just starting to recover. And I remember the day that I found out that I was pregnant, my friend and I had gone shopping all day, and I was just exhausted coming home from this shopping trip. And I was like, I feel like I'm like next level exhausted. Like maybe I'm pregnant. So I took a pregnancy test just kind of on a whim. My daughter was napping. My husband was on the couch. I was like, this is probably going to be negative. I'm probably just tired from walking around all day. And it was positive, and I was shocked. I called my husband into the bathroom. I was like, I'm pregnant. And he was definitely shocked too. And I think I was like more devastated than anything because I was like, I'm just recovering from this
Yeah,
C-section.
9 months out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so my immediate response was just like fear and anxiety about giving birth again. And I, yeah, wasn't sure if I wanted to attempt a VBAC because I wasn't sure if I wanted to go through another 36-hour labor to just end up in a C-section again. So for me, preparing throughout that pregnancy was, yeah, critical. Just preparing emotionally, preparing physically, preparing mentally. The doula that had taught the birth class for my daughter, I ended up hiring her right away. I was like, "Are you available?" I know that I need a doula because I had started listening to the VBAC link. She recommended your podcast and your website, and so I knew that I wanted to have a doula in the picture. And had pastors and family and friends praying for us for this decision about whether or not I should attempt a VBAC. And I also just spent a lot of time. I felt like for me, I really needed to wrestle through some of the, I don't know, like the spiritual aspect of what I had gone through during my daughter's birth. And I found a couple of books that were a really huge encouragement to me as a person of faith, just thinking about concept of birth through scripture. One of the books was called Holy Labor by Aubrey G. Smith. And she kind of walks through like doing some exercises, some spiritual exercises to kind of prepare your heart and mind for the process of birth. And I think that was just something that I hadn't really done with my daughter. And so I wanted to spend, yeah, some time like really preparing this birth, making sure that I was, yeah, seeking the Lord's guidance and, yeah, submitting to what I felt like he was asking me to walk through with this birth, as it wasn't something that I was, it wasn't in my plan to have this birth so close together. And so for me, that definitely helped prepare my heart and my mind. And I also spent some time with guidance from the VBAC link. I looked through the questions that you guys have for asking a provider about if they're truly like a VBAC supporter or not. And with it being a team of midwives, with it being a research hospital and a teaching hospital, they're definitely like very pro VBAC. Several of them had had VBACs themselves. And so I definitely felt like I had a great team of midwives who were going to be advocating for me through my labor and delivery. And I found out partway through the through my labor that my pelvic floor therapist was also training to be a doula. So I invited her to the birth as well. So we had quite the posse with my doula, with pelvic floor therapist, and then with this team of midwives. Yeah. And I think in the process too, I'm not sure who recommended it. I'm sure I heard it on your podcast as well. I started doing all the spinning babies exercises pretty early on. I was trying to eat better and walk more and just be, yeah, healthier in every aspect of that labor or of the pregnancy. And it was so something that happened during my labor at the med center. They approved water birth at the hospital and then also included VBAC moms in that. And so I was super excited to try a water birth. I had wanted to use hydrotherapy with my daughter, and so getting the opportunity to do that for my next birth, I was really excited about. So throughout the process too, my midwives were very supportive about waiting as long as I could to start labor. I really wanted to labor naturally. I did not want to go through another induction. But as we were getting, you know, past 40 weeks, I think I went in for at least two membrane strippings before 41 weeks. So I think at like basically 40 weeks, and then midway through the week, I went through and did another one of those. And I definitely started to have more contractions after those, but nothing that was like picking up and getting ready for actual labor. And so they basically started encouraging me, let's go ahead and schedule your induction. And I remember just being so like so upset about that, and also really not wanting to have the midwife that I had previously. Just for me, I felt like I needed to have like a clean slate going into this to try to attempt a VBAC. And yeah, they were so two of the more like senior midwives, I ended up meeting with them. I had my regular prenatal appointment, and then the one came in and joined us. And they basically kind of just helped me talk through my like fears around an induction and my previous experience. And they really listened to what had happened, and they really wanted to make sure that I had the support that I needed going into attempting this VBAC. And so basically, we plotted out, okay, we're going to do the induction on this day. It ended up being 41 weeks, 3 days. And that the midwife that was going to be on duty, I guess, throughout that weekend, it was a Saturday, she was going to be there Saturday and Sunday. So I would have her basically, regardless of how long my whole labor took, she was going to be there. So to me, that was a huge encouragement. And she was actually the midwife that I had hoped to get with my daughter. So I felt really good about scheduling that induction, even though I really didn't want to. So yeah, I basically just tried to do everything I could before that in that like week. I was walking curbs. I was doing my spinning babies. I went and I was like, talk to my doula. I was like, is there anything else you recommend for trying to get this labor going? I had been drinking my raspberry leaf tea. I'd been eating my dates. I'd been doing all the things. And she recommended, I think, acupuncture. So I
I
went and I
was gonna
tried
say
it.
acupuncture, maybe.
Yes. And I'd seen a chiropractor throughout. I had like basically been doing all the things you guys recommend, my doula recommended throughout my whole pregnancy. And acupuncture was not helpful. It was one of the, it felt like torture for me. I was just like sitting there, like, this is awful. I think it did actually start some contractions because that night I felt a lot more contractions, but then they kind of waned off, unfortunately. So, yeah. So then Saturday morning, the day of my induction, I had like was finally mentally prepared for, okay, I'm going to go in and do this induction. Like, I have my doula, I have my pelvic floor therapist, my husband is going to be there. I know the midwife, I like her. So I knew that I was going to have this great team there for me. And then I'm in the tub, just getting ready, psyching myself up, and I get a call from the hospital. And they basically were like, we're going to need to push your induction. And I was so mad. I'm like, no, I'm like finally ready for this induction. Like, please don't push this induction. But yeah, so we waited. They're like, you're on the top of our list to call in. You're 41 weeks plus 3 days. Like, we definitely want to make sure that you get induced today. Call back if you don't hear from us. And so I think we did. I think we called back like two or three times, like, hey, are you ready for us yet? And they're like, we'll call you now. Please just wait. So they finally did. I think we went for a walk that morning. We spent some time with my daughter and my mom, who was there to stay with my daughter, just kind of enjoyed the morning. And we finally had sat down to lunch, I think, and we got the call that they were ready for us and that they kind of asked, like, how soon can you get here? So we made our way. We put my daughter down for a nap. And for me, that was like a really sweet moment. I didn't know if I would be coming home from a vaginal birth or a C-section. And so I wanted to pick her up and put her in her crib one last time, just in case. And then leaving her was just really sweet, knowing that she was asleep and gonna be fine during my labor. So yeah, we went for the induction. I think when we got there, they did their initial checks and all of that, and started with a membrane sweep. And at that point, I was 4 centimeters, 50%
Oh,
effaced. So I was,
that's good.
yeah, I was like pumped that I was starting from 4 centimeters. I was like, okay, I'm not going to labor for 15 hours and still be at 4 centimeters, probably. So yeah, we all started in really high spirits. They started Pitocin. This time, the Pitocin was like they had it on a Like, I could walk around with it, which was really nice. And so my doula had me walking the halls. We were squatting. We were doing leaning over the bed. We were sitting on the ball. We were doing everything. She's like, I am going to work you to get this baby going. So we did that for a couple hours. I basically didn't want to get checked for as long as possible. So we just labored kind of as much as we could. And then so I think we started that at like 2:30 in the afternoon. At about 6:30, I kind of started needing a little bit more help from everybody, counter pressure, all of that. And then I was kind of requesting a cervical tuck. I'm like, I'm starting to feel like something is going on. So they came, my midwife came in, did the cervical check. She told my doula, because I was like, I don't want to know if it's bad news. But then my doula was like, do you want me to tell you? And I was like, I suppose. I was still at 4 centimeters, so I was like super bummed about that, but I was 90% effaced. So she's like, you still
Huge progress.
And like, for some reason though, I was like so stuck on the fact that I was still only at 4 centimeters that I like 90% is nothing.
Oh my goodness. From 50 to 90, that
Yeah,
is huge progress.
So I was like, okay, like we'll just keep going how we're going. She's like, do you want to try the tub? And I was like, okay, yeah, like let's try the tub. And for some reason, I was thinking I was gonna love the tub because I was thinking I could just lay in the tub and relax. And my doula was like, no, you need to be squatting in this tub. And I just like could not get into a position in the tub that I was enjoying. So
Comfortable.
yeah, so we got out of the tub and just kind of labored on the toilet. That I think is where I spent most of my time, actually. And
Dilation station.
yeah, there you go. Yep. Yeah, my husband and I would just like sit in there in the bathroom and just kind of talk and giggle. And he really kept me in high spirits throughout the whole labor. And I was definitely getting to a point though. I think I was like a couple hours after that first check And I started asking for the epidural, and my doula was like, I think we should wait. Like, you're doing really well. I'm like, I'm not doing well. And my husband, pharmacist that he is like, what else can we try? Can we try some nitrous? And I was like, ah, I don't think I'm gonna like nitrous. Like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do that. And so we kind of were mulling over that, and they did a second check at like 10 p.m. and I was finally 5 centimeters. I was like, okay, we bumped up the centimeters. I was 100% effaced. So I was like, okay, things are moving. I don't want to do an epidural yet. So we started on nitrous, and I labored on nitrous for a couple hours, and that was going well at first. I was in bed because I was just so exhausted at this point. And I remember on the nitrous, like I could definitely feel the pain, like pain, but I like did not care. And
It
it
just
was,
it takes the edge off.
yes, yeah, it was kind of wild. I would just like have these like thoughts while I was on the nitrous, like, oh, this is horrible and everything is going to be terrible. But then I would like the contraction would pass and I was like, oh, everything's fine. It was such a wild experience. And at that point, they were like setting up the table for baby. So I was thinking, like, okay, they're setting up the table for baby. Like, I must be really close if they're setting the table up for this baby. I felt like I was in so much pain. I'm like, surely I am 9 centimeters and they're, we're getting this room ready for this baby. So I think towards the end of that, like, couple hours, it was like almost 1 a.m. I was definitely starting to not cope as well. Even with the nitrous, I was like screaming and like rigid and couldn't handle it. And so my midwife mentioned pain management. She was like, I think we should do a cervical check and maybe it's time to think about an epidural. And I was like, finally, like I've been asking for this for hours. Even though I didn't want to do one in the first place. Oh, I forgot to mention in all of this. So we were. My birth plan was to have this water birth. So while I was on nitrous, they rolled in this birth tub, which was like one of those soft-sided, I think it was like a home birth tub, and they started filling it with this tiny hose. So it was going to take hours for this thing to fill to the point in which it was going to be like
Something
therapeutic.
to,
Yeah. And so I basically took one look at that tub and was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Which was kind of disappointing. I had really wanted to try a water birth. I thought that was going to be so sweet. Like, here's, this is going to be my story. Like, VBAC, first water birth VBAC at the med center since water births were approved. And I just kind of let that dream die a little bit. I'm like, if we just have a VBAC, I'll be fine. So, yeah, they placed the epidural. They checked me. I was 8 centimeters finally. And I was like, okay, like, this is feeling, like this is moving more
Promising, very
quickly.
good. Yeah.
Yeah. So they placed the epidural so I could get some rest, and it worked for a little while, and then it did not work. And so they came, anesthesiology came and like tried to problem solve. They were like moving me all around, trying to like get me in a good position to see if that was the problem. My doula was just like horrified during this whole situation. She's like, this should not be happening. And they called in, I think they ended up calling in like basically the head anesthesiologist who
Anesthesiologist.
finally, yeah, who finally was like, she's like, do you want me to place it again? I'm like, yeah, why haven't we done that yet? So they finally placed it again. And then it was the perfect epidural. Like, it, made the pain manageable, but then I could still move around. So I got a nap at that point. And then we did another check after I took a nap. So this was like 4:30 in the morning. They came in, did the check, and I was at 9 centimeters. So I felt really good about that. And I think they put me on Benadryl though at that point because there was some swelling from when I was on nitrous. I think I like was kind of subconsciously pushing while I was on the
Pushing.
nitrous. So they're like, I think we're just going to try to calm this down a little bit. And at that point, my midwife mentioned that if I didn't make progress in 6 hours, that we might need to discuss a C-section. And I was just like devastated. I'm like, no, like, as soon as my midwife left the room, I talked to my doula and I was like, okay, what do we need to do to like prevent the C-section? Because I absolutely don't want to do that again. So for the next 2 hours, my doula, our nurse, my pelvic floor therapist, my husband, like, every 30 minutes, they were rotating me into a different position. I was on the squat bar. I was over the top of the bed. I was side to side with a peanut ball. And I mean, seriously, we did not stop moving basically that entire time. So we set the goal of 2 hours to have another check. And I think during that time, I think I had my arms over the back of the bed and I looked down at my belly and I was like, all right, little boy, like let's do this. Like, I want to meet you today and I don't want to have a C-section. And so, and my doula, I think she kind of heard, I was kind of whispering to him. My doula was like, you're going to meet him today. Like, it's going to be okay. Yeah. So finally it hit 6:30. The midwife came back in and I was like, basically there. I was like a 9 or a 10 with an anterior lip, went away with contractions. So she was like, I think let's wait to push and let your uterus do a little bit more work. So then we set the goal to start pushing at 7:30. So in that hour, I was kind of psyching myself up to push because with my daughter, I had obviously pushed for 3 hours and still ended up in a C-section. So like I was excited to push with him, but I was also like, this isn't over yet. Like we might still have a C-section here. And so I think it hit 7:30 and I think I started crying. And my doula was like, this is a different birth. Like this is, this is gonna go differently than it did with your daughter. And I think I had my husband come over and pray with me and we started pushing. And my midwife did not leave my side from that moment on. Just my team during that whole time was just like my husband on one side, my doula and my pelvic floor therapist kind of trading off on the other side. And then my midwife, she was doing some internal counter pressure to kind of help me feel where I needed to push, which after my last pushing experience where I had like zero feedback, her telling me exactly where to push every time was such a huge encouragement. To know, like, okay, like I have this purpose, this
Direction.
goal, yeah, direction. Like, I know exactly what I should be doing. And she gave me encouragement after every time, like, oh, that's the push. My doula, everybody was just like cheering me on. And yeah, I think I just was in such a better headspace during that whole pushing experience. We tried a bunch of different positions, but I think I ended up mostly pushing from my back. And about an hour in, they started to see his head during the contractions. And I think I started crying again. And I was like, I'm gonna have this baby from my vagina. Like, I think
Oh,
that's when it finally hit me. Like, this is the
I've
VBAC.
got
Like,
this.
I'm
I've
going to
got
have
this.
this VBAC. And I think they did bring in the mirror one more time. And again, for me, it was just like, it was just, I think for it was nice to see his head this time because I could see his head, but it was just too distracting. Like, I couldn't push effectively and look at myself in the mirror. And so I had them take that away again. But I did, they had me feel his head. And that to me was really sweet, being able to like kind of feel his little hairy little head. That was like the first thing my midwife said was, man, this kid's got a head of hair. So yeah, just kept pushing. It was kind of funny because again, they were getting the room ready and I'm thinking, all right, this baby's gonna come out at any minute, right? Like we've been pushing for a while now. He was really stubborn and he just kind of like he'd kind of crown a little bit and then he'd get sucked back in. And I think my midwife was like getting frustrated at one point looking at some of the video. She like basically just like stuck her hand in and it was like kind of just took a hold of his head, like, you're gonna come out. So yeah, finally, again, 3 hours later, it was almost. So I started pushing at 7:30. It was like 10:21. He was finally born and he came out and everyone in the room, everyone, nurses, doula, everyone, whoa. Like there's just this audible whoa. We had done a prediction of his weight earlier in the day. And I think my daughter was 7 pounds, 14 ounces. So, and I didn't gain as much weight with this pregnancy. So I was like, I think he's probably smaller. I bet he's only like maybe 7 pounds, 7 ounces. So everybody had their predictions. Well, I pull him up to my chest. I'm like, don't care how big it is at this point. I'm just like, he came out. He's so sweet. I'm crying. My husband's crying. Like, we did it. we're having our moment. Well, then they get him all cleaned off, they get him weighed, and the nurse who weighs him kind of gets the attention of everybody in the room, and they're like, all right, like, any last guesses of how much he weighs? 9 pounds, 14 ounces.
Okay.
A full 2 pounds heavier than my daughter, and I was shocked. Like, part of me, I'm like, I'm sure that's why it took him so long to come out. I'm like, this boy was a big boy in there. And yeah, it was just wild getting to meet him. And yeah, it was really sweet because once they got him back on my chest, I looked up at my husband and I said, "You have a son." Like, I don't know, it was just such a different experience than my C-section baby, being able to have this baby and bring him right to my chest was just so sweet. So
Absolutely. There is something about that. Like, and it sounds like your husband, everybody was so invested, like in this birth, right? So I'm
definitely.
sure the room, the positivity in the room and the emotions were high.
Definitely.
Yes. Do you, I'm curious, did you ever get your op reports with
Oh,
your
yes,
first baby? Did they
I
say
did.
like any reasons why you had your, obviously we know your baby, I mean you said ace in clinic, so we okay position, but I'm wondering if they ever said anything else in your op reports.
So, from what I could tell, and the OB that I had at the time, she said, "This is not for like your lack of ability to push. Like, you're having very effective pushes." And I think in the op report, it basically was just like, her head was tilted, ace in clinic.
Okay.
And then, yeah, she just would not descend, basically. I think she
Failure
was
to
only ever,
descend. Yeah.
yeah, I think she was only ever at like, oh, and I never remember, above zero, one above zero. Like, she
Yeah.
didn't, she was never gonna, she wasn't gonna come out
Minus
that
one
way. Yeah.
station. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
So,
And okay. Yeah. And we know with
yeah.
ace in clinic, it can be harder, and there's
Yeah.
positions and things like that that could help,
Yep.
but are often not offered
Yeah.
or even known about. So.
Yeah. Yep. So, but I did look at my chart after listening to your podcast. As I was like, I want to know what they said about me in these notes. So I definitely kind of scoured those. And honestly, like, after hearing some horror stories on the podcast, I felt like the care that I had was very respectful and like, yeah, just had a lot of support from everyone at the hospital. So, yeah.
Yeah. Support is so important.
Yeah.
So important. I'm so
Yep.
glad that you got your powerhouse team
Yeah.
and that you went in and you had this induction that you weren't like really wanting, but then it
Yeah.
ended up really great.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, are there any tips that you would give moms who are listening who may be going in for an elective induction or medically necessary induction?
Yeah.
Any tips for them?
I definitely think a doula is key, especially after that like 2 hours where it was like, hey, you might need to have a C-section. And then my doula and my team like worked me like a rotisserie chicken to get that baby in a good position. Yeah, without her. And I do think that part of, who knows with my C-section, like what could have gone differently, but I do think if I would have had a doula there to support me, things would have gone so much differently. So I feel like for an induction in particular, like you're going to be there for a while probably. So having somebody who can kind of make that time productive, definitely a game changer. So,
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
because if you didn't have someone there, you might have just been kind of hanging out, chilling, not doing too
Yeah.
much.
Yeah.
And, in that 6 hours, maybe something would have happened.
Yeah.
Maybe
Yeah,
not.
who knows? Yeah.
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 Oh, well, congrats again. And
Thank
thank you
you.
so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to the vbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.